this is Sabrina Marie, host of the Building Abundant Success series. Our spotlight is on the ABC documentary, The Knockout. Mike Tyson's documentary is coming up on May 25th. It's called Mike Tyson, The Knockout, and our guest is featured in that documentary. He's veteran producer Dave Woolley. He's promoted athletes and celebrities such as Stevie Wonder, Dionne Warwick, Tony Bennett, B.B. King, Loretta Lynn, the late James Brown, Run DMC, Queen Latifah, Snoop Dogg, and many more. And he's featured in this great documentary. He talks about not only his great career of working with athletes such as Julius Erving and Mike Tyson and many more. He talks about his raising two great daughters, which are the apple of his eye and the prize of his life, as well as his future. Dave and I are coming at you right now. We are really excited about you being featured in the Mike Tyson, The Knockout documentary, but there's a lot of steps that you went through in life along the way, so we wanted to know where you're from and tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello, hello, hello. Well, first of all, it's an honor to be on your show. Congratulations on success. You know, really, it really is just a pleasure being here. I'm so excited. Well, you know, first of all, I'm Dave Woolley, W-O-O-L-E-Y. My good friends call me Woo, short W-O-O. I was born and raised in Harlem, New York, and, you know, in the 70s, et cetera. I grew up in the projects there. And, you know, early on, I realized that there was a better way of life outside the projects, and I wanted to explore that, and that was through music. So, 9 years old, I got a drum set, and that was as a consequence of going to the Apollo and seeing the great, great James Brown, Godfather of Soul, perform, and telling my mother I wanted to be like him. She said, "Ooh, James Brown?" I said, "No, the drummer." She said, "Thank God." So she bought me a drum set that following year for Christmas, and you know, I just continuously practiced so that I could perfect my craft as a drummer, and eventually became one of the top city drummers and working with people like Alvin Ailey Dance Company, Dance of the Apollo, and others, and then the great Norman Connors kind of discovered me and added me to his group, and that, you know, went on to back people like Phyllis Hyman and some of the great ones that came through his group. And, you know, really, that was the springboard to my career. I mean, it really was. It was very, very exciting. I was about 16 years old at that time.
16. In Harlem, 15. Growing up, what were the conditions there that you wanted to do some other things?
Well, you know, the conditions were really tough. It was very emblematic of the kind of situation Mike Tyson grew up in Brownsville. You know, I saw drugs, I saw prostitution, I saw gangs, but I also saw a rich culture, and I saw African-Americans striving as well. So, you know, I had to make a decision of what kind of life did I want to live. And it was the latter. You know, I wanted to do some bigger things in life. I went on to, you know, went to high school, 124th and Lenox, which was a Catholic high school, Rice. Then later earned my BBA in business administration and my MBA University, Wilmington University in Delaware. We relocated to Delaware. And it's been an interesting journey and a very blessed one at that.
Wow. Now, it's interesting. We're talking about Harlem of a different time. Harlem is prime real estate right now. So some areas of Harlem have turned themselves around, right?
Right, exactly. I don't even recognize it. It's not the Harlem I grew up in. I can tell you that.
You know, and it's funny. I was talking to someone who deals with Harlem. I went to Howard University, and it depends on when you went to Howard University, whether it was in the transition or whether it was in the, you know, more recent times. I went in this millennium, and I got to see a lot of interesting things. But as a kid, just 7 years prior, the Howard Theater had not opened up. In fact, it was still boarded up, and it was still pretty rough when I was a small kid. So to see the transformation of Harlem, and then to see the transformation of D.C. in these areas, many areas we don't even own anymore. It's interesting how there's a major turnaround in how it's prime real estate now.
Oh my God! I remember you could buy a brownstone in Hollow for $1 if you, you know, committed to renovating. You know, that's a $1 property now. So, now it's been interesting. I remember, you know, really when I was growing up, the only time we saw it, like, you know, people were really on a tour bus. Looking at us, pointing at us, and we would throw rocks at the bus, you know, because we felt like we were encaged, you know, and they would be pointing and stuff like that. So, you know, now, last time I was there, which is pretty recent, you know what I mean? It's a multicultural kind of an environment. You see whites walking around at 3 in the morning, riding bicycles and holding hands.
How many times did you see James Brown? Did you see him at the Apollo?
Yeah, well, that was my very, very first time. And then later on, fast forward, as I moved to Delaware, I went to university, I started a production company, got into the entertainment concert business as a producer and as a promoter. Many years later, you know, I actually promoted a few of his shows. So it was an interesting experience to work with him as a legend. And I remember one show I was producing is for the city of Wilmington. It was an outdoor, I think, like a 4th of July kind of a thing. 50,000 people there in the park. And I had his dressing room all set up beautifully. You know, in his rider, he said he wanted a dryer, you know, a hair dryer. So, you know, I personally went out and bought the dryer, and it was a dryer, you know, like a gun, in the shape of a gun. So Mr. Brown, as you're supposed to call him, walks in the dressing room and it's laid out flowers, fruit, you know, and he looks over at the dresser and he sees this blow dryer. And he says, "What the hell is this?" I said, "That's your blow dryer." He said, "Oh, hell no, man. I don't need this shit. I need a dryer." I said, "Well, that's what it is." He said, "No, I need a hooded dryer." I said, "What?" As a producer, I'm running around, "Where can I get a hooded dryer?" You know, like the kind of one that's been in the beauty salons, you know. So to see my idol under a hooded dryer with rollers in his head, you know, really to this day, I can't get that image. Can't get that image out of my head, for sure. I get PTSD when I think of that. But
that's an experience and a memory there, huh?
Yeah, you know, but, you know, James Brown was such a legend, such an icon, and paved the way for so many, and we became dear friends, and, but, you know, my very first experience was with him at 6 years old, and many years with him as a producer, so, and promoter, so, you know, I love those memories and good times.
You know, and being a producer and a promoter, that's real hard work, and that's no joke. how were you able to get into that profession?
Well, as I said, I started my professional career really going on tour and playing in front of large audiences with Norman Connors. He had the great hit "You Are My Starship." And when I moved to Delaware to go to college and live with my dad at about 19 years old, Norman had called me and said, "Listen, you know, the group wants to, we've never played Delaware, Wilmington, you know, find a promoter and ask them to bring us in for a concert." And I said, "Well, this is Delaware, you know, there's no promoters here." And then I'll never forget this. He said, "Well, aren't you Dave Woolley?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, why don't you be the promoter?" And I said, "Okay." And then I said, "Well, what's a promoter?" So he told me what I had to do and, you know, buy tickets and find a place for the group and pay them. And I did that, and I, you know, was very successful in that. I think I made about $3,000. And it was like, well, do I play drums or do I promote? And, you know, from a business perspective, to promote is that really, really interesting. And that's basically how I got the book. And then from there, I just went to bringing other folks through and then doing tours. And I've worked with everybody from, you know, people like Run DMC to Tony Bennett to Loretta Lynn to B.B. King to Run DMC. And, you know, a host of others. I don't want to kind of go down the long list of resume, but, you know, it's been a diverse group of entertainers.
awesome. And working with these legends, you know, you're talking about Dionne Warwick and Stevie Wonder and Tony Bennett and the late B.B. King and the late James Brown, Run right. DMC, you're seeing some really interesting history as it happens. What's your most memorable concert and or event?
Well, you know, they're just way too many. You know, I love Dionne Warwick. You know, to do a Dionne Warwick concert and show is really just magical, because almost every song that she sings, it's a hit after hit after hit after hit. And I forgot you, Sonny. I forgot you recorded that. Oh, that's anyone who had a house. You know, anyone who had a home. A house is not a home. Walk on by. You know, I also happen to be Dionne's business partner, and I'm a co-author of her best-selling autobiography book. So, you know, we have a long, long-term relationship, over 25 years. So, yeah, I would say, you know, working with her has just always been very magical, you know, because she is a true legend and an icon. But not to discount all of the others, because everybody has their own unique talent and specialty. But then, you know, trying to narrow down to one thing, I think my greatest production has been the birth of my two daughters, Vita and Davina Louie, and being a single father and raising those two young ladies. One is 24 now. She passed the bar in January of 23. She's an attorney in Nevada. My youngest is 23, and she just graduated last week from Georgia Tech with her master's degree in computer science. So, you know, wow. As a black dad who's single dad who, you know, raised them since they were 2 and 3 years old, that's the Dave Foley production. That's my greatest production. I thank God.
That's beautiful. We love hearing stuff like that. Awesome. Between the music and the sports, though, how different is it to promote those events in two different types of genres? Because you've done not only the music side, you've also done the sports side.
Yeah, there are not too many folks who have played in both arenas, because they relate to different sets of groups of people, different cliques, and skill sets. Once I became pretty successful in the concert world, I wanted to branch out into the sports world, and the biggest fight that was coming down the pike in 1986, I'm going back now, was Sugar Ray Leonard versus Marvin Hagler. And I thought, you know, listen, I can sell out arena with a concert, so I certainly can sell out arena with putting a giant screen and a concert sound system and having people pay $30 to come in and watch the screen. Because during that time, it was before pay-per-view, so everything was closed circuit. But we had to, like, get in the parking lot and you beam it into the arena. So that was what I wanted to do. However, when I went to New York to meet with one of the largest sports and boxing company, which is called Top Rank, I went to them to try and buy the entire state of Virginia, and they told me, you know, despite having the resources to do that and my success in concert, they explained to me that, you know, concerts, promoting concerts is one thing, promoting a closed circuit fight is another thing, and I have skill set. So, and they were absolutely right. I didn't understand it at the time. You know, to do a concert, that's one night. You go to the next city, you do another one, that's one night. By the time you get, you know, midway through, you got it together, it's perfect. Well, a fight, you know, you have one night, you might have 40, 50 locations, and it's all going on at one night, and you don't get a redo. You know, you don't have a second shot at it, so it has to be perfectly executed. You have to have the manpower. And so I ended up doing that Sugar Ray Leonard fight in a small city called Charlottesville. And then Roanoke in Virginia, they were successful. And then eventually, those numbers helped me to secure the rights to the entire state of Virginia with the Mike Tyson, Michael Spinks, Once and For All fight in 1988. In fact, they grossed over $70 million. And I happen to be the only African-American in the country to own exclusive pay-per-view closed-circuit TV rights for that particular fight. So that became historical.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, meeting, and because we are featured in the documentary, Mike Tyson, The Knockout, before we get to that, your interest in music
we've talked about. How did you transition into the sports world?
Well, that's how I transitioned from wanting to go from concerts to doing sports, because the sports just appeared to be a lot more lucrative than, you know, playing a group and then having to get blow dries and hooded blow dries and, you know, make sure I didn't have to deal with the attitudes and the egos, you know,
right,
this screen and put a satellite dish and sell tickets and advertise and promote. So it was a natural progression. So essentially, I ended up doing both at the same time. I would do tours, I would do concerts, and I would do big fights when they came down the pike. And that's how I got involved with both worlds.
You got to meet Mike Tyson. When did that happen?
Yeah, well, Mike grew up in Brownsville, which is, you know, very similar to growing up in Harlem. In fact, we used to call it Blacksville. I met Mike a few times. The picture that is used in the publicity is a picture I took with him at the actual press conference, in fact, for the Tyson Spink fight in 1988.
Uh-huh.
It was the press conference to announce to the world that the two of them were going to fight. It was huge because neither one had been beaten. You know, they both had a zero in terms of never losing a fight. So Michael Spinks was considered the Ring Magazine champ, and, you know, of course, Mike Tyson had the belt. So, it was huge, and I was at the press conference because I was, was awarded the rights to the state of Virginia, as I mentioned, and the entire state of Delaware in terms of both pay-per-view and closed circuit rights. That's how I met him.
In the documentary you're featured in, talk about the life of Mike Tyson, and it's interesting how he was saying that people never thought that he would amount to anything. And I wanted to ask your question, because you said that you grew up in Harlem, and, you know, it was a situation that you wanted to get out of. Many people who are successful, you know, there's something that actually drives them to want to be better. You know, they really have that focus. And you were one of those people who had the focus, hey, I want to do some things. What are the top three things in your world and in your mind that you could really tell our audience to keep their vision and their eye on a goal if they really want to achieve? No holds bar, no excuses, no, you know, well, I have to do this, I have to do that. There's got to be something that has helped you, Mr. Dave Woolley, to actually be a success. What are those things that you have seen not only in your life, but with some of the people that you have worked with? They have a lifestyle and a life of excellence, even though they have the knocks, even though they've had the downtimes.
Well, the God in me is the man in me. And I say that humbly, but for the grace of God, you know, none of this would have happened. So the first advice is to be humble and to realize that it's all a blessing, and to keep God first. I lead with that every day. That's the first and foremost, because, you know, it's not about your success. It's about your legacy, what you leave behind. And your children are, as far as I'm concerned, the destiny of one's legacy. So,
yes.
You know, it's very important that we kind of put these things in perspective. All these are wonderful accolades, wonderful accomplishments, but, you know, it really in life is about relationships, the relationships you have with people, the humanity. So what I've tried to do is treat everybody as I want to be treated and treat everybody honestly and fairly and, you know, base my life based on love. Education is another very, very important factor. I did get formal education, which helped. People ask me all the time, oh, you did this, you did that, you know, I bet you went to big school, you know. I said, yeah, I went to a big school, UCLA. They said, oh, California. I said, no, University of the corner of Lenox Avenue.
Yes.
That's where I graduated, you know, watching the brothers on the corner, you know, negotiate for the incense, you know, watching them negotiate for the Muhammad Speaks newspaper, bean pies, and lectures, you know. So there's a value to street knowledge as well. I mean, and I take difference between education and being intelligent. So I take intelligence over formal education any day. However, you do, for success, especially long term, it helps to have both. So, you know, I would encourage our audience to, you know, with those kids and those children, and even if it's you, that's something you want to do. Teach yourself. Do your due diligence. Do your homework. You know, with the World Wide Net, you know, you can Google. You can educate. You can pick up a book. It's never too late to start a new career. Never. So one has to just really, if you can think it, you can do it. And that's the key that really has kind of kept my energy going. Don't talk about it. Be about it. Not today. Not tomorrow. Now.
And the last part of that question, which I didn't ask, networking, being able to be workable. There, I'm sure many times and many instances, things haven't looked like they were going your way. But networking, being able, as you say, being humble. How important is it to be a positive networker?
Very good question. Networking is extremely important. Especially in the African American community, especially among women, and men, you know, for that matter, because you can't do it on your own. You have to be able to reach out and make phone calls, and that's how you gain power. So as I mentioned earlier, I tried to treat people fairly. So now I can pick up the phone and call. I don't want to drop names, but I can call, you know, quite a few people that are very influential and very powerful. And many people can call me as well. So that came out of networking. But, you know, as you're building your brand, and I think everybody listening to needs to really understand that you are a brand. You don't have to be Kim Beyonce or Jay-Z to be a brand. Each and every one of us that are listening to your wonderful show here. And by the way, congratulations. You did a great job. So proud of you. Keep doing what you do, girl. But, you know, you have to look at yourself as a brand. The way you talk, the way you walk, you know, the way you respond to emails, if you're on time. And that's all about building yourself and letting people understand and know who you are. It's very important. You know, in the trailer, I said there in the 80s, there were three black men that moved the world. There was Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, and Mike Tyson. And everybody wanted to be Mike. The only issue was, you know, what Mike did you want to be? Mm-hmm. And so those three gentlemen, you know, really are African-American men that really kind of took this world by storm. Now, mm-hmm. That didn't happen overnight. You know, it didn't happen overnight, but it did happen. And for the fact that there's going to be May 25th, this knockout, Mike Tyson is going to be on ABC at 8 p.m., guys. Make sure you tune in. And if for some reason you can't make that night, then you can watch it the next night on Hulu. But, you know, it's going to be a two-hour special. And then part two will be June 1st, which is Tuesday. And, again, that's another two-hour special. So this is a four-hour series. And for a network like ABC to put as many resources and dollars behind this event for a black man, for an African-American man, you know, it's really invent television. We all like a story where you rise to the top and then you fall down and then you come back. Because, you know, with faith and with God, we all can come back, you know. You know, we fall down and we shall get back up. And that's what this is going to be. You know, so I want everybody, your eyes will guarantee glued to the television.
Yes.
I'm really excited to be part of this.
What's next for Dave?
Yeah, you know, I have quite a few things. I just finished producing and co-directing and writing a documentary, which is going to be fabulous, an all-star documentary featuring the life of Miss Dionne Warwick. And that'll be out later this year. We're not sure. We'll have it announced with streaming company. It'll be out. But it's unbelievable. We have people like we have Quincy Jones in it, Stevie Wonder, Alicia Keys. I mean, a whole host of the who's of who's our industry are in that documentary. So, you know, I get to put on another hat and become a director, you know, and produce a film. And I'm excited behind that. I have a couple other projects I'm working on, including a book. So, you know, life goes on, and this is what I want to tell the audience. You're never too, age is just a number, guys. Come on. You know, if you think that you can do it, so just put your mind to it and start today. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't even wait till tonight. Start. Just do it. You know, it's really that simple. And keep God first. You know.
What is your website?
Yeah. You can reach me. I'm on Instagram, Dave_Really. On Instagram, Dave, D-A-D-E, _. My last name is W-O-O-L-E-Y, Really. And, of course, I'm on Facebook and all the other Instagram and Twitter and all the other things like that. I'm pretty easy to find. Really easy to find. You know, we got to do this again. What do you think?
Yes. You're welcome to come back anytime you have anything new. We would be honored to have you back. Mr. Dave Woolley, we've been talking to him. He's the veteran producer who's featured in the documentary, Mike Tyson, The Knockout. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right. This has been wonderful. May God bless you and your audience. And I look forward to seeing you soon, real soon. Have a great one.
Thank you. God bless.